This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are fired up and ready to go here on this Monday. What up? It's JVT flying solo for the day. Stormy Bonatoni out on assignment. Will return tomorrow from sunny San Diego. We'll get her thoughts on everything she's missed and the wonderful trip. And maybe she took a visit to Little Italy. I really enjoyed my time out at Little Italy, the time that I went out to San Diego. We will have a ton to get to here on this program as well. A ton of great guests, a lot of preseason football, college football, and the like. So let us not waste any more time and start, as we always do, with the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
We persevere. We continue, as does the training camp tour, even without Stormy B. Cheese, please, is the call for today. Green Bay Packers are up as part of our training camp tour. Really fascinating team. You know, a team that I had my preconceived notions on and kind of thought some of the negativity around the team was a little insane. And then you hear and dig into the roster a little bit more, everything going on, you understand maybe why there was some trepidation around the Green Bay Packers. And we have one hot take from somebody on this network that we will play that I can actually kind of get down with. We'll tell you what it is, what it means for Green Bay as they are our next stop on our training camp tour. We also have a conference call today, not the boring kind. We will take a look at the college football playoff candidates for each of these conferences. We have totals for CFP teams. Will they go over or under? How many college football playoff teams will we get in these respective conferences? Some intriguing bets to be made. I think that there's a couple where you can really make the case for a plus price there, but some alternate ways to play it too. If you think a team, or a conference I should say, can go over a total amount of teams in the CFP, why not just play this team instead at a little bit more to make the college football playoff? We'll discuss those and why, but we'll begin, as I think a lot of people did today on a Monday, get used to it, it's football season, with some snap judgments following a week of action in the National Football League, preseason specifically, as week one in the books, relatively entertaining week of results in the NFL preseason after the first week. But I think from a betting perspective, the big thing is going to be the results in general from an ATS and total standpoint. Underdogs over the weekend absolutely ruling the way for the first week of preseason action. 9-6-1 straight up, 11-4-1 against the spread. Totals 12-4 to the under in this first full week of action for the NFL preseason. And this is, I think, the big one, because we talk about this all the time. People will call betting the NFL preseason degenerate action, right? You got a problem if you're betting the NFL preseason. And the argument is always, well, you know, if you're actually taking it seriously and you're following information and you're getting ahead of line moves, it can be a profitable venture for you. And in the larger sample size, that is the case. And I know a lot of people might push back on this because we're results-oriented as a society in general. But closing line value does matter. And in a large sample size, if you get the best of closing line value, you're going to be profitable when it comes to that. Having said that, in this NFL preseason, that has not been the case. If you steam chased every three-point move or more on the side and total, right before kickoff, you're 0-10-1 against the spread. You've been slightly better from prior to, but the whole point here is the information-based moves, the sharp moves, if you will, ones that have shaped the market, have not been profitable so far this year. And it's just such a good example of, again, we talk about this all the time on Sundays. We're going to have these all the time as the football season gets here. You're going to hear about sharps versus squares and where they're at and whether or not you want to be on the side of the sharps. Oh, look at my phone's going off. That shouldn't happen. See, this is why I don't put this on, although it's a killer ringtone, Mario. You always want to be on the side of the sharps. Sharps bettors are getting different numbers. And so even on weeks like this last week in the NFL preseason, when line moves are taking it on the chin, you're still not taking it as hard if you are actually in front of these line moves as opposed to on the back end. So it's always a really good example in terms of line move and a very good lesson. We'll see if that continues as the preseason continues. But outside of that, we had some, I think, interesting results in terms of their effects on certain awards markets. And let's start with Offensive Rookie of the Year today. We can talk about the rest of the awards maybe as we move forward, but we're finally starting to see these guys in action. But the theme, I think, for the Offensive Rookie of the Year has been injuries. Over the weekend, we see Jeremiah Love get dinged up in the game against the Raiders. Now, there is some thought that Love was maybe overworked. Why are we playing him here in a meaningless preseason game? Blah, blah, blah. They let him have the Hall of Fame game off, obviously. You want to see what your guy has. 14 touches, not too bad. 24 snaps. But he's dealing with a high ankle sprain, unlikely to play again in this preseason. So what does that mean? Schefter, by the way, ESPN's Adam Schefter, reporting that the team is hopeful that Love can return for the regular season opener on September 13th against the Chargers. But this offensive rookie of the year market is starting to be pretty interesting because there are a lot of injuries that are starting to affect some of the guys near the top. We had, remember, right before we left the air, I think it was on Friday, Saints wide receiver Jordan Tyson, offensive rookie of the year market. He was injured, so we have something to deal with there in terms of the hamstring. Jadarian Price missed the Cowboys game with what is being called upper leg soreness. And then you have Mekhi Lemon, who's got this hamstring issue as well, causing him to miss some time at camp, didn't play in week one. So you look at the top of the offensive rookie of the year market. Look at these names. They're all the ones that we have mentioned here that are dealing with some sort of ailment or another. Jeremiah Love, your favorite, at plus 450. Fernando Mendoza at plus 550. Carnell Tate also at 550. Jordan Tyson at 6-1. Jadarian Price at 650. Mekhi Lemon is 14-1. Dejon Stribling at 20-1. And there's certainly a chance that once the regular season comes around, that all of these rookies are going to be perfectly fine. They're going to be available. They're going to be able to play at whatever level that they can and achieve whatever they can achieve. But it is pretty interesting that all of the short shots, for the most part, are dealing with something here, save for a couple of them. Carnell Tate, for example, health-wise, he was fine. Production-wise, wasn't really great against the San Francisco 49ers. Three targets, zero receptions. Watched every single one of his routes and snaps. Look, I'm not going to pretend to be a man who is nuanced in looking at the way wide receivers play, getting out of their breaks, and being able to assess it accurately. Didn't look overtly impressive in terms of – impressive, not oppressive – in terms of getting open, the agility, things like that. Maybe, again, he'll be fine. Maybe it's a preseason game and you're going through the motions. Not something you really love for a rookie in a new regime, but just something worth noting that I didn't think Carnell Tate was overtly impressive when you looked at that game against the San Francisco 49ers. And then you get a couple of others. I know Stribling, for example, for San Francisco has been a pretty hot name because of the injuries that this team is going through, especially at that position. Well, Stribling against the Titans is pretty solid. 8 targets, 7 receptions, 63 yards. And then we had some other names that stuck out. A couple of them are not listed. Some of them are. Camden Brown, for example, against Seattle. 3 targets, 3 receptions, 62 yards, 2 touchdowns, an undrafted rookie for the Dallas Cowboys. Maybe that means something. Maybe it means nothing, but he's not even listed at all. So we'll see if he even makes a roster. And then Reggie Virgil, through 2 games for Arizona, has been very good. About a 5th-round pick, I believe it was, for the Arizona Cardinals. But through 2 games, 10 targets, 7 receptions, 109 yards. He's 175-1 over at FanDuel. The whole point here being is that we should probably keep an eye on this market because even with just one regular – or excuse me, preseason game week in the books – there's been some interesting news about injuries for these guys near the top of the market, and we've had some pretty solid performances that are from guys deeper in the market as well, and that includes, of course, Carson Beck, who we don't even know is going to be able to play. I still think he's got a pretty good shot at this, but again, he also has his own injury with the ribs. So worth noting the ripple effects of some of the injuries we're starting to see in camp pile up. Big picture, it's for a lot of the veterans too, but for the offensive rookie of the year market, you can look at a lot of these guys and see that they're dealing with something. And maybe that's going to make this market more volatile as we head into the regular season. But with that, week two is on the horizon. We do have our opening lines for week two as well. A couple of interesting notes. We'll roll through these really quickly. The Raiders open up as 1.5-point favorites with a total of 38.5 on the road against the Texans on Thursday. 49ers open as 1.5-point dogs with a total of 39.5 against the Los Angeles Chargers. I think this is the most interesting opener that I saw of all of them. On Friday, August 21st, the New York Jets are going to be on the road against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Speaking of young players who can be impactful, we saw Drew Aller for the Pittsburgh Steelers perform exceptionally well against the Green Bay Packers. Steelers open up as 3-point favorites with a total of 39.5. Look, it's preseason, but from a preseason power rating standpoint, the Steelers are going to see that spike only because of Aller's performance. One has to wonder if maybe it's a little too much. Again, it's one game, so we'll see if maybe that carries over. I know a lot of people thought highly of Aller, and remember, he was a high prospect for a while. Last season in college didn't go particularly well. Slips down draft boards, doesn't go where maybe initially some expected. At one point, conversations about him being a first-round selection. But either way, again, this is kind of the theme of the preseason so far. Are we doing a little too much? Are we doing a little too much when it comes to the news and the movement of the line because of news that has been widely available? And are we doing too much in upgrading the Pittsburgh Steelers power rating because Drew Aller had one kick-ass performance against the Green Bay Packers in the first week of the preseason? Will be interesting to see. Jacksonville opens up as a 1.5-point favorite with a total of 39.5. And then speaking of those Packers, they're on the road on Friday against the Denver Broncos. Broncos open up as a 3.5-point favorite with a total of 38.5. We expect that Bo Nix is going to play here for Denver. Sean Payton told us last week. So let's remember that too, okay? When you get the press conference this week, where Sean Payton comes out and says, Bo Nix is going to play, he's going to give you a series or two, Bob, and this number goes up to like 4.5 or whatever it is, and I'm just guessing here, but it seems very similar to the Cincinnati Bengals-Detroit Lions game in the first week of the preseason. The week prior to that game, Zach Taylor told us that the starters were going to play. Then, the week of the game, he told us the starters were going to play. And the market freaked out, got that thing up to 7. Bengals never came close to covering that number. So I wonder if we're going to get a similar example here, because that Bengals game opened 3.5, similar here to the Broncos opening as 3.5. I think at -3.5, it is being factored in that we're going to get Bo Nix and maybe some of the starters out there for the Denver Broncos. But just keep that in mind as we remember, Sean Payton told us last week that the plan was that Bo Nix was going to play this week for Denver. On Saturday, we get a full slate of games. Some of the more interesting lines there. Lions open up as 2.5-point favorites, total of 36.5. Offense wasn't great. Remember, the Lions are dealing with quarterback issues of their own. Remember, they had to bring in Josh Dobbs as well, so we'll see what that means for them. Browns are 1.5-point favorite with a total of 39.5 with their quarterback battle going on. Vikings open up 2.5 with a total of 38.5 at home against Baltimore. And the other interesting team from a preseason power rating standpoint, if you will, Colts at home against the Atlanta Falcons. There's two things at work here. First off, Falcons don't look very impressive at all. And by the way, speaking of the Falcons, we'll get to the bottom of some of the granular details of what's going on with them coming up in a couple of minutes. But the Colts open 2.5 with a total of 37.5. Similar thing here. Remember, Shane Steichen told us last week, plan was Richardson starts and then Riley Leonard, and you're going to flip that for this other game. We're not going to get Daniel Jones, so there's no expectation of that for Indianapolis at all. Saints is a 1.5-point favorite on the road against the Rams. Giants, 1.5 with a total of 37.5 on the road against Miami Dolphins. And then how about this? Doesn't sound like we're going to get Joe Burrow, but how far we have fallen. Bengals open up as a 1.5-point favorite with a total of 40.5 at home against the Chicago Bears. Patriots, 1.5, 37.5 against the Eagles. Chiefs, 1.5, 36.5 against the Bucks. And the Cowboys are 1.5-point dogs on the road against Arizona. Speaking of those Falcons, let's head out and find out what's going on with Atlanta, the quarterback battle. Should we be freaking out? Josh Kendall is going to join us from The Athletic, the Falcons beat reporter, to find out what's going on with those dirty birds.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Coming up in about 30 minutes, we don't really need to react to the AP Top 25 poll, but we'll discuss that. The number one and number two team in the country coming out of the Big Ten, Ohio State and Oregon. But we'll have that as part of some college football news coming up at the very bottom of the hour. But let's not waste any more time. National Football League is top of mind. Josh Kendall is with us on the Progressive Guest Line, Falcons beat reporter for The Athletic at Josh The Athletic up on X. Josh, we appreciate a couple of minutes. Thank you very much, sir. So let's just start. You guys just got done. Well, shouldn't say just got done. Yeah, you had a little bit of time since the Monday practice here for Atlanta. I know you noted this on Twitter. James Pierce Jr. did not appear in front of the media despite the request. Let's talk about the ramifications of this 8-game suspension. Well, first off, when the news came down, your reaction and the ripple effects of a team that might be looking for a pass rush, obviously, elsewhere for the first 8 games of the season.
Yeah, not surprised. If I was surprised by anything, it was not that it was a little bit longer. I think 8 games was about the minimum I expected, based on the precedent of the NFL, based on the details that we saw in James Pierce Jr.'s incident in February, based on the fact that there was video and, you know, that didn't make the league look or James, you know, the situation look good at all. So I thought he might get 10 or more, honestly, but 8, you know, is half the season. You know, you're going to come back, you're going to be out, you can't practice for most of that time, you can't practice for any of that time. So in reality, you know, it's going to take a while to work him back in. It's going to end up being more than 8 games. And what you got to remember is that Jaylen Walker, last year in top first round, the Falcons drafted Walker and Pierce. They combined for 16 sacks. Two weeks ago, Jaylen Walker tore his ACL. Mm-hmm. So they're both gone now for the first half of the year, and James Pierce Jr. will be, you know, limited in the second half of the year. So a team that set a franchise record with 57 sacks, thought it had fixed its pass rush, certainly is back to square one now.
So the back end of this defense, let's focus on what the effects could be here. What does this defensive back room look like? Because if they're not getting pressure, that means those guys are going to have to hold up a lot longer. Do you think they're going to be capable of doing that?
Well, that is their saving grace. Maybe they're only one on defense. With Xavier Watts and Jesse Bates, they've got, you know, certainly a top 10 safety duo. I think a top 5 safety duo in the league. A.J. Terrell is a solid cornerback. Mike Hughes is a solid cornerback. They drafted A.J.'s brother, Avion Terrell, who's another cornerback in the first round. He's had a hard time staying on the field in training camp, just kind of minor dings. But they've got depth in the secondary, and they've got some talent at safety. So I do think that they can hold up in that area. They're just going to have to hold up well enough to create some pass rush with what they've got left up front.
All right, let's talk about, of course, what everybody wants to talk about, these quarterbacks. And we'll start with the performance in week one. Obviously didn't go as well as I think a lot of people expected. What have you seen from Tua Tagovailoa? Because we have yet to see Michael Penix cleared for 11-on-11, correct?
Correct. So despite the fact that we haven't seen Michael Penix cleared, Michael Penix was actually throwing more balls the first 10 days of practice than Tua was, because Tua came in with back tightness, missed basically the first week, and then kind of worked himself back in the second week. And it looked kind of rough, as you would expect from a guy kind of working himself back from back tightness. The week prior to the preseason game, it had started to look better. It looked like he was getting comfortable, looked like he was getting in his rhythm. And then Friday night, it just really looked bad. So I think, you know, where Tua had a chance to establish himself as the clear leader, to sort of extend this little lead he's got on Michael Penix Jr., he did not do that. So you're kind of back to square one on that, too. But you know, with the lingering question of when Michael Penix will be cleared for full work, you still got to think Tua is the front runner. But it's, you know, the whole thing is up in the air.
When it comes to Penix, I know he had the quote about his doctor saying his ACL was like the greatest ACL he's ever seen, or I'm paraphrasing, whatever it was. Is there an inkling of when he might be cleared for 11-on-11?
No, we're just waiting for the surgeon to say, you know, check that box. They do not expect him back this week. If you watched him, if you came out to practice and watched him, you would think he's every bit as healthy as Tua, every bit as healthy as anybody else. He has acknowledged that it's, you know, physically he's doing pretty well. Mentally, he's just got to get over the hurdle. And they're not going to push that. He's not going to push that. This is his third ACL tear, his fifth season-ending injury. He's been through this before. I'm not going to ding him for being cautious, because this is a guy who's halfway through his rookie contract. This is a critical year for him. He has got to be able to, when he gets on the field, he's got to be able to give his level best effort, because frankly, this might be his last shot to be Atlanta's starting quarterback.
Josh Kendall with us, Falcons reporter for The Athletic at Josh The Athletic. So I was relatively high on Atlanta, as you could be with a team that's, you know, where they're at here in this division. And a lot of it had to do with Kevin Stefanski. He's worked with a lot less on offense out in Cleveland, has done a pretty good job. What have been your first impressions of Stefanski now that he is at the head of the table here for Atlanta?
Professional, you know, he is a pro. He is detail oriented. He is not, though, going to give away anything at the podium. You talk about the fact that we don't know, you know, when Michael Penix is going to be cleared, and Kevin Stefanski is not going to give us any clues either, boy. He is, you know, we're going to take it one day at a time. We're going to work on today. We're not worried about, you know, 3 weeks down the road. We're not even really worried about tomorrow. So, you know, we're just going to have to be patient. But he has proven, he does have a track record of success in Cleveland, which is not easy to do.
All right, Josh, what about this offensive line for Atlanta? Because it seems like, and you could tell me a little bit more being closer to the team, but the last few years it's gone from a real strength to maybe some questions, especially retirements, injuries. What's your feel on how this offensive line is going to look heading into the regular season?
They're just aging. No. They're still quality players. They still got a bunch of first-round guys, but they're just aging, and it's starting to show up. You know, they've had 5 years under Dwayne Ledford, who's now with the Ravens, and they're switching to Bill Callahan. You know, you're never going to, you know, that's never a bad thing, having Bill Callahan as your offensive line coach, but there's going to be a transition. You're going to see probably them asked to do more gap and power scheme stuff than they did under Dwayne Ledford, who was a big wide zone guy. So it's just going to take some time to adjust, and they've got to get Juwan Taylor healthy and back in the rotation at right tackle, because their reserve right tackles have been a problem so far.
Has there been anybody in camp that people should be aware of that maybe is not a household name that you've been impressed by so far?
Zachariah Branch is the guy who has popped, third-round wide receiver pick. Comes out of the University of Georgia and Southern Cal. He led the SEC in catches last year at Georgia with 81, caught 81 balls, but almost every one of them was at the line of scrimmage. The Falcons say they can get more out of him, and he's a dynamic guy with the ball in his hands. He's also going to return punts. If there's somebody who pops in a positive way for Atlanta, I think this year it'll be Branch.
All right, Branch, 80-1, by the way, for our audience to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. All right, let's talk big picture for this team before we get you out of here. They are generally projected to finish last in this division. They've got the longest odds to win it. Win total sitting at about 6.5. A big picture for this Falcons team, just given what you've seen, what are your expectations for them?
Not great. I mean, I think that if this team was in the, you know, the NFC North, you'd be talking about them as a real possibility for the top pick or in that conversation. In the NFC South, there are no guarantees. You could be a playoff team. You could be 8-9 and a playoff team. So if they don't get better play at quarterback than they've gotten so far in training camp, then frankly they've gotten from their two quarterbacks the last 2 years in their situations, or last season in each of their situations, you know, this is not going to be a team that has a lot of success. If they get hot, Michael Penix or Tua plays well, you're in the NFC South, who knows? But I think the ceiling is probably 9-8.
Are you buying the hype for New Orleans, by the way? Because they're a very, very sexy pick this year.
No, not really. But, you know, you could draw names out of a hat, honestly, for this division. Yeah. If Baker is fired up and, you know, healthy, I would pick the Buccaneers. But we don't know, you know, exactly what that's going to be. Maybe the Saints are great, but no, I am not on the Saints bandwagon. I have noticed too that a lot of people seem to be, and again, you know, they might absolutely win this division, but that's, you know, I don't know if that's anything to crow about.
All right, Josh, we appreciate a couple minutes. I forgot last one for you. I promise this is it, but any indication or what do you think is going to happen for the second preseason game in terms of Tua playing again? Has Stefanski let you guys know that at all, or has there been any conversation about that?
The plan now is not to play any of their starters in the second game because they will have joint practices with the Colts in Indianapolis on Wednesday and Thursday. So their starters will get a lot of run then. The plan all along has been not play any of the starters in the second preseason game and get them back into the rotation for the third preseason game. So I expect Tua and the rest of the guys to get a lot of work in those practices and then to watch on Saturday.
Josh Kendall, again, you can find the work at The Athletic, covers the Falcons. Josh, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, you got it. At Josh, The Athletic, up on X. Not great as somebody who thought buying in on the upside of the Atlanta Falcons, right? I tried to be smart. Maybe hasn't really been the case. All right, when we come back, we'll get to Major League Baseball. Our guy, Jensen Lewis, is going to be with us. We've got some plays from him. We won't talk about my elbow tendonitis on the air, I promise. And we do have some breaking news that came out about like an hour and a half ago in the association. I told you the entire time they didn't do anything wrong, and we found out that was just the case.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sources. NBA has no evidence Steve Ballmer funneled money to Kawhi Leonard via his sponsors. According to a report from ESPN, the NBA has found no evidence showing LA Clippers owner Steve Ballmer funneled money through the team sponsor to pay Kawhi Leonard in order to circumvent the salary cap, according to three people with knowledge of discussions between the two sides in recent days. We will get to some of the details of this maybe a little bit later. It matters because then, of course, maybe the trade can go forward for the Toronto Raptors. But we should also note that the NBA has actually released a statement in response to this report saying ESPN's article regarding the Los Angeles Clippers investigation, for which the NBA declined to cooperate, contains numerous and significant inaccuracies. Oh boy, the results in this matter will be made clear once the investigation is concluded. So we'll have more on this a little bit later, but let's focus on Major League Baseball. With us now, Jensen Lewis, our major leaguer, former, of course, pro and host of VSiN by the Books. Baseball. We are inching to the home stretch here, even though football is starting to take over. I wanted to hit you with a couple of big news topics. We're going to touch on these a little bit later, but any worry about some of the injuries that we have seen take shape here in Major League Baseball over the last couple of days? Some big names hitting the injured list. Jensen, Justin Robleski on the IL for the Dodgers. Dansby Swanson hits it for the Cubs. Tyler Soderstrom on the IL with a hip injury. Anything that we're remotely worried about with those three?
Yeah, buddy, great to be with you as always. And I think, you know, just let's focus on the Dodgers the top here. When you look at the rotation, Jeff, obviously with Ohtani, doesn't sound like anywhere close to being back to resuming, not only getting to the mound with regularity, but finding his way back and building up to become a starter. Now you lose Robleski, and you know, again, another dent sort of in this team, JVT, that it feels like they're taking on a bit of water with how bad the offense has been here. We'll talk about it upcoming here in a minute, but yeah, you're basically down to, I say this in quotes, down to Yoshi Yamamoto, mm-hmm. Tarek Skubal, Blake Snell, Eric Lauer, and Roky Sasaki. So again, the rich are still fine, but now your edge is thinning, and you're going to hope that Tyler Glass now finds his way back in earnest here, hopefully by the end of the month, if not the first week of September. So that'd be a huge boost for them. But JBT, I got to tell you, I mean, this is an offense that is quite perplexing right now. The talent is there, but man, do they look old. They look tired. They look fatigued. Like there's a lot of long bat paths. There's a lot of swing and miss in this lineup. Just some we're not, you know, used to seeing at this point in the season. And I think a bit more vulnerable as Milwaukee really exposed them, winning 3 out of 4 here over the weekend.
Yep, and Milwaukee, of course, right now in control of the top spot in the National League. So maybe the Dodgers will have to go out on the road when they face out some of these teams in the postseason. So I'm with you, and I think that led to a lot of people buying in on the Chicago Cubs post a trade deadline with some of the news and bits and bobbles they got, including, of course, we saw Clay Holmes right before the weekend go near perfect in an outing on Friday. But let's stick with the Dodgers. They're on the road against the Colorado Rockies. Opened up as about $2.35 favorites against Tomoyuki Sugano and the Rocks. Blake Snell's going to be out there as well. What do we do in the second start for Snell since returning from injury?
Yeah, I like the under here, JVT, and not often that we do that in the Mile High City, just knowing that it is this offense, but that is where we are. Prisoner of the moment, looking that it is a sustained amount of time now that the Dodgers have been unable to score. They're 25th in Major League Baseball and runs scored at the beginning from August to where we are now. Tomoyuki Sugano has actually pitched quite well. His last 5 starts, a very respectable 3.38 ERA in 29 1/3 innings. Colorado's actually been pretty solid offensively, one of the top scoring teams. However, it is Blake Snell, as you mentioned, and has traditionally been very good in his career against Colorado. So 10 punchouts in his first outing back. Look very vintage Blake Snell here, even in the thin air there of Coors Field. I think the breaking ball plays quite well later on tonight. Do I think the Dodgers win it? I do, but I don't think it's as high scoring as we've seen in series past when the Dodgers come to town.
All right, let's stick with another total that you've got. We'll go out to the Windy City. White Sox and Cubs will go at it. Interested a rivalry here. Total about 8.5. Are we playing this thing over or under?
We're going to play an under here, too. And JBT, who would have thought that we would talk about the first-place Chicago White Sox, yep, not a first-place Chicago Cubs team, in the middle of August. But that's where we are. Head of steam here for the Southsiders coming off a sweep in the Motor City. Really big statement sweep for them and really lengthening their lead in the Central Division on the American League side. Luis Castillo, the start for them, really a great bounce back his last time out after a bit of a dud that first time coming over, putting on the White Sox uniform. 7 shutout innings, just the 1 hit allowed and 10 strikeouts against his former mates in the Cincinnati Reds. I think he continues that. And now a Cubs offense, yes, they have been able to score in bunches, but I think St. Louis really illuminated a pretty big chasm and maybe a way to exploit this lineup the way that they pitched to this Chicago lineup over the weekend. You do get Shota Imanaga, who last time out, you know, the home run ball got him in Washington. But JBT, you look at his last 6 consecutive starts at Wrigley Field, it is 2 earned runs or fewer. For whatever reason, he's been able to kind of rein it in here as of late and go on a nice run there on the north side. So obviously it's going to have a pennant, you know, playoff type feel for this series with both teams really in the thick of it here. But I think we get a low scoring affair. Give me the under 8.5 here for White Sox Cubs later tonight.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. Should we be buying? I mean, they're minus like 250 to win this division, so it seems like it's a pretty hefty price. But there was a lot of like, oh, watch out. Don't think this White Sox team can hold on. And like you said, that's a statement over the weekend of this series. They've got the, I think, fifth easiest schedule left in Major League Baseball with 39 games left to play. I mean, even if you want to swallow that individually, add it to something. But it feels like this team's been a little undervalued, Chicago.
I would agree. And maybe a correlated way to play this and knowing just kind of how Tampa Bay is a comfortably large lead ahead of both Chicago there, the White Sox and the Houston Astros currently leading the West. I'd be interested in see if it's a better price for the two seed there to get the bye on the American League side. Might be an interesting spot. I don't have the numbers up for me right now, but I know DraftKings has, you know, those exact seeds and those odds there might be a little more advantageous, but I think Chicago right now, the way they're going, just looking at their next three series here at JVT, the Cubs obviously beginning tonight, then back home against the Mets team, who's, you know, a bit of an upstart right now, and then the Texas Rangers, who have really been a roller coaster club, both offensively. They've gone in spurts where they've pitched well, and then, you know, they kind of lay an egg yesterday in a series finale in Sacramento, a place they should have been able to take advantage of where the A's are at this point. So Chicago in prime position, 5.5 up here on the Tigers beginning play today. I do think they outlast both Detroit and Cleveland to get this across the line, but I would be interested in a two seed in the American League price for sure.
All right, let's talk about the Boston Red Sox still holding firm in the American League wild card, but they have fallen back down to earth and looked much more mortal. Now they get the Arizona Diamondbacks, a team that fancies itself a playoff team as well. How are we going to handle this game tonight between these two?
Yeah, I kind of like the sneaky dog here on the road. And you talk about a team that's playing well as of late. Torre Lovello's crew there with the Snakes really starting to be very consistent series in and series out. For people that don't know, the young left-hander, Mitch Bratt, who's going to get the start tonight, last three starts, .150 ERA combined. And I think he presents some lineup challenges, especially to this Red Sox lineup, who all of a sudden has regressed a bit, and Pittsburgh took it to him over the weekend, especially yesterday. But I think now you look at kind of the situational spot here. Arizona comes in, a lot of confidence, playing very well, a lot of balls in play, opportunity to create some traffic on the base paths. It will be an opener tonight. Alec Gamboa will open, and then Brian Bello will have the bulk relief. Bello has had his druthers. You know, there have been times where he has looked utterly dominant, and then there is times JVT has been a pinata. I'll err on the side of the team that I think is in better form right now, and I think they got the better arm on the mound to at least start it out. Gimme Bratt and the Diamondbacks plus $1.35 on the road in Fenway.
Are you buying where the market's at with these two teams? I mean, just DraftKings here, but Padres are $1.85 favorite to make the playoffs. You're getting like plus +115 on the D-backs. They do have one series left, and that'll be their final series of the regular season. But is the probability of the Padres with the slightly harder schedule really that high they're going to make the playoffs? They're only a game up.
Yeah, that is fascinating, right, too? I mean, how about the Padres' next three series, too? In New York, although they did just handle the Guardians and have done quite well on the road here as of late. Back home then against Minnesota, who's starting to trail off a little bit. And then Pittsburgh, that'll be a great challenge from that pitching staff up against that high-octane offense. So I'm with you. I'd want to kind of team that price, though, JBT, with the Padres. I'd want to team it with something else just to get a little bit of better payout there. But, man, this was the design by A.J. Preller. Go out and get those starting pitching reinforcements. They have been really solid thus far. I think Casey Mize is going to be trending much better, especially with some of the offenses he's going to face and knowing where he's at moving forward. And then Robbie Ray, of course, has all that experience in the postseason side. And then finally, we got Maury Hone and Mason Miller to finish it off, man. It's a 7-inning game. Those guys have been about as automatic as it comes here down the stretch.
All right, last 45 seconds. Our draft is coming up this week. It's an NFL futures draft. You were in the MLB futures draft, too. Do you know where you stand at this point? Do you have any strategy for coming up on Thursday in the NFL?
Yeah, I think I'm fifth overall. I would imagine the division winners go quickly again. Last year, I believe you had popped the Eagles one first overall, so it makes sense with only eight potential winners that could transpire. So that's kind of where I'm shaded at the moment. We'll see if Patrick Maher goes the same way when we get there on Thursday night.
All right, man. We appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Yep, you got it. I would not wish you luck, though, because we're competitors against each other in this draft. So, I mean, I don't want you to have any good luck at all. All right, when we come back, we'll get into some of the more minutiae maybe of that Clippers report if we get some more details. We also get into some college football news, big injuries now the camps are all fully underway, and playoff team totals for each conference. Which team is we're playing over? There is one that I think is definitely worth looking at.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
College football season is almost here. How about that? 7 days from today, we will be, of course, on the doorstep of week zero. Make sure you're ready to go with the VSIN College Football Betting Guide free. With a VSIN Pro subscription, it has previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from all of VSIN's sharpest minds. And it's not all. VSIN Pro, when you sign up, gets the NFL Betting Guide, the Fantasy Life Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSIN Watch app. Try it today for just $9.99 or lock in a full year. Save 50% with a VSIN Pro annual subscription. Go to VSIN.com/subscribe, VSIN.com/subscribe. News today in the world of college football, AP poll is out. We were all waiting with bated breath to see what the rankings were going to look like. We got the college coaches poll a couple of weeks back. I don't think there's any big surprises. Ohio State, your number one ranked team in the country heading into the regular season. Oregon follows up at number two. Ohio State got 40 of the first place votes. Oregon received 14. Indiana received the third most first place votes, end up finishing sixth in the AP poll. And Notre Dame had six overall first place votes, ended up finishing fourth. So your top five, Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia, Notre Dame, and Texas, who did not receive a first place vote. Miami comes in at seven. They got one. And then round out the top 10, number eight, Texas A&M, number nine, Ole Miss, and number 10, Oklahoma. Two notes for this, three actually. First off, no group of six team ranked at all. A couple of received votes. Boise State was the leading vote getter amongst the group of six teams. And let's see this. Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers not ranked. It is the first time that they are not ranked in the preseason poll since 2011. For those who don't remember, the Money Moves poll did not have Clemson ranked either. Not the craziest thing. But for the first time since 2011, Clemson will not be in the top 25 to start the season. And this is one, too, just to keep in mind for the big picture moving forward, as Brett McMurphy from On3 notes, friend of the program, at least one team that started the season unranked finished in the top 10 in the final AP top 25 poll in 29 of the last 32 years. You can keep that in mind as we move into week zero next week. Well, plenty of coverage for week zero. Storm will be back tomorrow, too, so I'm sure we'll get really into what's happening in college football. But the news is your number one team in the country, the Ohio State Buckeyes, for the AP Top 25 poll. With that, wanted to hit a couple of news. Well, these will be quick, but just some nuggets coming out of camp, because now we're starting to get these camps underway for college football. Training camp, of course, has been underway. But, of course, with more camp, more practice, bodies flying around, you're going to get some injuries. Tennessee is going to be focused here because I'm very high on this Volunteers team. We've talked about this, wrote about them at length in the college football betting guide that we have out there. But losing their starting safety during fall camp, Idris Faroukh, to a season-ending injury, tore patellar tendon. Faroukh started all 13 games, ranked second in the SEC with four forced fumbles. He was second on the team with two interceptions to go with 76 tackles a season ago. The Volunteers defense, probably one of the bigger questions outside of Faison Brandon, the alleged, we'll call it, starting quarterback. Again, I haven't seen anything official. I assume that's going to be the case. The five-star freshman. Although, Cole Kublik told us last week when we talked to him, don't sleep on McIntyre out there to potentially win the job. But a big injury nonetheless. Jim Knowles, of course, taking over as defensive coordinator for Tennessee. A loss for his unit as Idris Faroukh is going to be done for the season at safety for the Volunteers. And then Alabama, a team that I'm also relatively high on, too, in the SEC. Running back A.K. Deer, injury for the foreseeable future will keep him out. Suffered it in the first scrimmage for Alabama. Deer had, for those who didn't know, been in the mix for the starting running back job, trying to replace Jim Miller. Crimson Tide now have a couple of guys, Trayshawn Brown, who is a freshman, highly regarded, E.J. Crowell, and Daniel Hill. Hill, for those who do not know, led the team with six rushing touchdowns in 2025. So a couple of injury notes that you can focus on or put in your notes as we move forward. But let's take a look at the totals for CFP teams from each conference as we're talking about it. And the ACC is going to be front of mind because they're one of two conferences with that number of 1.5 of the power conferences that I do think are pretty interesting. I think this one, I get to an under pretty easily here when you're looking at the ACC. But let's take a look at the odds. Total CFP teams for the ACC, 1.5, shaded to the under, -145. The conference champion likely to get in, Miami Hurricanes, most likely candidate, favored to win the ACC at -140. Heavily favored Miami is to get in at -280. Wide assumption is that Miami is going to be that one ACC team in. So the question becomes, can any other team get in outside of Miami? And can they get in without a conference title? Your top three candidates here, SMU, Louisville, and Clemson, I think are going to be your top three candidates to potentially make it in to the college football playoff. And SMU is probably at the top. If SMU, though, gets through its schedule with some key scheduling spots on the road against Louisville on September 19th, November 21st on the road against Notre Dame, because that's been the question is, you know, let's say you get Louisville, lose to Notre Dame, and then lose in the ACC championship game. Would a two-loss SMU team, with the losses being to Notre Dame and we'll assume Miami, would that be enough to get into a college football playoff? That's going to be the question. And even if you think that's the case, my thing would be, wouldn't you rather just look at SMU and say, all right, wouldn't you bet them +350 to make the college football playoff, as opposed to betting over 1.5 ACC teams? Because I get somewhat squeamish when I look at these other candidates to potentially make it into the college football playoff from the ACC. Louisville, for example, you know, your biggest and brightest spots on your resume that you could add, SMU would be fine. October 3rd on the road against NC State. Again, this is assuming that you don't get this ACC championship game if you lose to the likely candidate, which is Miami. Obviously, beating a Miami, if we're assuming they make it into an ACC championship game, gets you into a playoff more than likely, but any loss really could tank Louisville's chances. I think they would need to win the ACC because their schedule just really isn't that strong in terms of actual pelts on the wall that you could rely on. And with Clemson, too, do you trust that this team's going to be able to make it through what is a relatively difficult schedule, at the very least, with three pretty big landmines? On the road against LSU, home versus Miami on October 3rd. We'll include South Carolina. A lot of people are high on the Gamecocks. I kind of question what's going on with Lenore Sellers and why he generates so much respect when it's all about potential as opposed to actually what we've seen on field. But if the Tigers lose to LSU, and they're 9.5-point dogs to do so, and Miami, I mean, you're going to need to win the ACC, and that would mean likely a beatdown or a victory, we'll say. Beatdown is going to be at the hands of the Tigers, potentially, of Miami in a rematch in an ACC championship game. Under 1.5 teams from the ACC, I think you get there pretty easily. The Big 12 becomes pretty interesting because I think BYU is your obvious candidate outside of the assumed champion Texas Tech Red Raiders. And BYU, I think you look at them, the key scheduling spots for the Cougars – you've got September 12th. I'll include it because I like Noah Fifita against Arizona. But the reality is Notre Dame and Utah, let's say their lone loss this season, in the regular season, is at home against Notre Dame. And let's even assume they lose to, we'll put Texas Tech in a Big 12 championship game as well. Remember, the Big 12 championship games aren't supposed to count. The conference championship games aren't supposed to count. If BYU is a two-loss team whose two losses are one to Notre Dame and the other is in a Big 12 championship game to Texas Tech, would that be enough to make it in to a college football playoff? I feel like that should be enough. And the problem is you're really banking on BYU because I don't really buy the potential for the rest of the Big 12 here. I think Utah is going to be pretty down. We've talked about this a lot. The rebuilding offensive and defensive lines, I think it causes concern for Utah, who is, from a power rating and conference championship standpoint, as you see it there, on par with BYU. But I think that's a mistake. You have Kansas State, who I think is just going to be a product of their schedule, at 14-1, and then Houston at 17-1. So I think this one, too, as opposed to playing over 1.5, if you think that this conference is going to get two teams in, I think the way to play it is BYU at +330 to make the college football playoff. That's the one I feel the strongest about, just because if you think they're getting two, it's going to be BYU, and I just don't know if there's another scenario in which you're looking at Utah or Kansas State making it in. We can play this back when I'm wrong, but I think that's the way to attack this as opposed to going over 1.5 for the Big 12. Now you get to the big ones, right? The Big 10, projected college football playoff teams, totals 3.5, shaded to the under at -120. We believe our extremely probable Big 10 playoff teams, Ohio State and Oregon, and then you get to that next tier of playoff contenders. You obviously have Indiana, who's a top 10 team in the country. You have USC, Penn State, Michigan potentially. I would like to draw a line through Michigan. I mean, this schedule is littered with landmines. Oklahoma, Iowa, we'll include Penn State, but you get them at home. Indiana, Oregon, and Ohio State road trips there. Hard to believe that Michigan's going to come out through that stretch, not blemish-free, but with quite a few wins, right? A vast majority of victories in those spots as opposed to the others. So I feel confident there. I do not share the same love for Penn State, as Stormy does, as we have discussed many times on the show. And I do think that, you know, the schedule presents some challenges. Home versus USC, at Michigan, at Washington. We talk all we want about how easy the schedule is, but if Penn State goes 9-3 and loses those three games, I don't know if they're a playoff team in general. So you're really banking on USC and Indiana. And Indiana, I think, has the draw here that you like. And by the way, they play each other. So whatever team you're relatively high on, you're looking at that angle, right? Indiana gets USC at home. The Trojans have a pretty tough schedule, although I think their improvements, especially with Jaden Maiava at quarterback, they can get it done. Oregon, Washington, at Penn State, home versus Ohio State, at Indiana, and at UCLA. I've played USC to make the college football playoff, and so I think that you can get into a spot where maybe you get to four. But if I'm right and USC makes it in, that maybe means they win over Indiana. One would assume that's a pretty good, if you're simulating it 1,000 times, you've got to have an Indiana victory there. And if that's the case with Indiana, can you beat Ohio State? Would your resume include Michigan and Washington and be enough to get in? Would you get those four in there? But I do think USC can be a third team. The question is, will Indiana be able to make it through? We'll have to get to the SEC at some point, too, because this is the one where market truly believes you're getting four. SEC over minus 155 on 3.5 teams. I think we feel confident that Georgia and Texas can make it in, but then you get the likes of Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, Texas A&M. Can any of those four make it in? All right, top of the hour, coming up, training camp tour continues. We're in the NFC North. The Green Bay Packers are with us next.